Welcome to Pro Wrestling Powerhouse Radio at blogtalkradio.com. You can interact with the show by calling 760-888-5749 or use the hashtag PWPRadio on Twitter. Here are your hosts, Jay Leno and Will TLD Vampides.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to PWP Radio, episode number 37. Big week this week. A lot of big things going on in the wrestling business last night and last week, and we'll get to all that tonight. Thank you so much for joining us here. Happy Memorial Day weekend, everybody out there. I hope you had a great one. Hope you had a safe one. Big party weekend for everybody, but you got to remember what the true meaning of Memorial Day is, and that is all those men and women out there that have fought for our freedom for so many years and just do things that none of us want to do, man. Like, not a lot of us want to go out there and risk our lives for others. And our armed forces, man, they give more for us than you could ever imagine. So if you know anybody, just say thank you. Absolutely say thank you, because that's what Memorial Day was all about. But PWP Radio live on the air. We're taking calls all night. If you want to call in, get your voice heard about anything. Anything in the wrestling business, whatever you want to talk about, we will talk about. 760-888-5749 is the number. I will be on Twitter all night at PW Powerhouse. You can hit me up on Twitter and use that hashtag PWP Radio. And tonight, you know, it's a special night. The summer, the unofficial kickoff of summer just happened yesterday, and we will be discussing some of the biggest matches, moments, and memories from summertime past in professional wrestling. Now, what a lot of people don't realize is pro wrestling gets in kind of a little bit of a funk nowadays once summer rolls around. I'm talking about the business aspect anyway. The shows are usually pretty good. They try to stack them up a little bit. They try to do something a little special for the fans during the summertime, because there's so much for people to do during the summer. You know, there's the beach over here at the Jersey Shore. There's the boardwalk, which is up and running, by the way. Get your ass down to the Seaside Heights, Point Pleasant. Seaside Heights is kicking. It's going strong. But anyway, there's so much to do. People go to the beach all the time, amusement parks, whatever there is. So WWE, TNA try to stack their cards. So tonight, we will talk about some of the biggest matches and moments from wrestling's past summer. But before we get the show on the road, go check us out on Facebook, facebook.com/ProWrestlingPowerhouse. Check out ProWrestlingPowerhouse.com. It is the mother website of this show. It is the site that keeps this show rolling. I just wrote an article today on the speculation of what CM Punk will do at SummerSlam this year. I think it's pretty interesting, the direction they may be heading in. I like it. I think it seems pretty good, pretty exciting. So we'll talk about a little bit of that tonight as well. Make sure you go to our Amazon store, PWP Radio Amazon store. You can definitely help out the show that way. You know, we do this for free. Don't get paid anything. And if you want to give back a little bit, if you're a fan of the show on iTunes, here on Blog Talk Radio, Stitcher Radio, wherever you listen to us, go to our Amazon store, buy whatever you wanted to buy in the first place, and just a little portion of that goes back into my pocket to pay the bills for the show, because it actually costs money to run it, but we don't make any money back. So definitely check us out on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, like I said, Facebook, Twitter, etc. So right now I'm going to bring in the panel. We've got a full house tonight, jam-packed show. I'm going to bring in my main man, my brother, from another mother, TLD.
It's TLD. Yeah. Four-time tag team champion. I'm curvy. I'm cute. I'm a champion. Folks, it's phenomenal what I do. You get to lay on TLD. Buy everything, Dennis. I'm TLD.
All right, TLD in the house. What's going on, man?
Not much. I'm enjoying myself in my computer chair in my new apartment. That's right, ladies and gentlemen. I left the nest. And I'm just hanging out here, ready to talk some pro wrestling and finally some positive TNA talk.
That's what we're actually going to kick it off with. We're going to kick it off with a little bit of TNA talk and something
segway.
I thought was
I like
one of
segway.
The... Yeah, one of the most exciting things that happened in wrestling, I think, in the past few weeks And that was what took place at the end of Impact. Well, that'll be in a few weeks, but we'll talk about that as well. Let's bring in the rest of the panel. We got a full house tonight, as I said. Here's my main man. He is the heartbeat of our Facebook page. He has fans among fans, and that is my main man, Toph. Toph, what's going on, brother?
Hey, guys. How's it going tonight?
People love you, Toph. And there's a lot of fans on that Facebook page that really enjoy reading your content. So keep it going strong, man. Keep getting us over that 2,000 mark and beyond, dude. I appreciate it. Good job.
Oh, no problem. Thanks. It's a part. Sorry. I'm, like, really tired. No problem. Thank you.
It's all good, man. It's all good. And how about the host of Oh, You Didn't Know? I haven't played his theme song in quite a while.
Yeah, and you shouldn't.
But I think I'm going to do it. So here comes my man, JCD.
I'm a nice man. Yeah, I'm an ass man.
Yeah. How about it? What's up, ass man? What's going on, bro?
Nothing. What's doing?
Nothing much, man. How you been?
Good, man. You know, things are good. Working, taking care of the little guy, you know.
That's
so,
what it's all about. How was Memorial Day, everybody? John, how was your Memorial Day weekend? Was it good? Barbecue?
I worked all weekend.
That's usually what I do. This was my first Memorial Day weekend off in 14 years. I worked a little bit on Friday. I had like a day job in Seaside Heights.
Okay.
But, man, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, felt pretty good. First in 14 years I actually had off. So, you know, I had just felt it a little bit. I loved it.
Holiday weekend retail. I'll leave it at that.
All right. Well, you're leaving it at that, but we're kicking it off with the end of TNA Impact last week. And how about the major swerve with AJ Styles? Some people saw it coming. I'm going to admit, I kind of saw it coming, but TNA did a damn good job in making me believe that it wasn't going to happen. It was one of those deals where I'm sitting there and I'm watching it, and I'm like, he actually drank the beer. Oh, my God, he actually hit Kurt Angle with a hammer. What is going on? You know, and I was shocked because I just was waiting for him to turn on Ace and Eight somehow, some way. And then it happened, and it was awesome because they really drug it out kind of slowly and drug it along. That's a good thing that TNA can do every once in a while with their storylines and the way they do things. That's their old-school mentality from Bischoff, Bruce Pritchard, Hulk Hogan, stuff like that. They get it in that sense. So, TLD, I'll kick it off with you. What were your thoughts on AJ Styles being the lone wolf now? For sure, he made his decision. He's not with TNA. He's not with Aces and Eights. He is the lone man.
Yeah, my Memorial Day was great. Thank you, Jay, for asking me. I appreciate it. So, was AJ Styles joining Aces and Eights? That definitely was a little bit of a swerve. And the fact that he drank the beer, like he did the hammer shot, you know, it was really good. It was all built up very well, even from the previous match for Kurt Angle and Ken Anderson. That match was a nice little swerve added onto it, you know, but a lot of unanswered questions coming out of it, like, what is AJ Styles' real deal now? If he's not going to be with TNA, he's not going to be with Aces and Eights, you know, who is he really defending now? What's his purpose for coming back? You know, I think that's what we have to try to figure out with AJ Styles right now, because right now, if he has no allegiance, you know, that makes him in a way vulnerable, but I guess it also puts that mystique in his character. So, I mean, I like it. It's something different from AJ Styles. We have never seen AJ Styles like this, so I'm really enjoying it. I thought how they put that whole night was perfect. It did.
Yeah.
Everyone was swerved. There's no one that said, he's going to, when they started drinking the beer, he started, like, you know, putting the symbol up of the Aces and Eights. Yeah, I mean, you truly believed it.
Exactly, and like I said, I initially saw it coming, like, when the segment first started, I'm like, he's not going to join Aces and Eights, there's no way. But they had me believe in it, and that's the great thing about it. I see AJ after that as, like, you know, I kind of saw him as Stone Cold Steve Austin for a second. Don't get me wrong there, but I saw him as a bit of a vigilante-type guy, like Sting was in WCW back in the day, or a little bit like Taz was in ECW, where he didn't have any alliance to the triple threat. He had no alliance to really just Rob Van Dam and Sabu, although he was kind of forced to team with them. He was kind of a one-man band, walking on his own. And not Heath Slater, I don't mean him. But And, you know, it just kind of felt that way. It felt special. It was kind of like when Diamond Dallas Page was about to join the NWO, and then when he put the shirt on the last second, he gives Scott Hall the diamond cutter. It was absolutely awesome. Toph, I know you're the biggest TNA fan that I know, and you must have loved this. What were your thoughts on this whole angle with AJ Styles?
Yeah, I don't understand what people are saying. They don't understand whose side he's on. It's pretty obvious. AJ Styles is on the League of Shadows side. You know, it's obvious. He's the phenomenal Dark One. He's part of the League of Shadows. This is the first of me. You think I'm joking? I'm serious. This is going to lead to the League of Shadows coming to TNA, and it's going to be the best thing that happened. It's going to be Frontline versus Main Event Mafia. I'm just joking. It was fine. It was a good show. And yeah, all AJ needs now is some fake stings. I mean, fake AJs. You know, like a little mask army. And, yeah, AJ would be great, yeah. I'm looking forward to his match with Angle. They always have great matches. I saw him at a house show about 2 years ago, man. They steal the show every time. So I'm very curious because even though he's not Aces and Eights, he still hit Angle with the hammer. So, you know, so I'm very curious to see the match there. It's going to be a good match.
Yeah, that's what really swerved me too, man. I thought he was going to smack one of the guys holding him for sure, and then he hit the Angle on the leg, and I'm like, dude, he just turned. He's Aces and Eights now, but they got me, I'll admit. How about you, JCD? What were your thoughts, man?
Yeah, I actually thought it was really well done. I was always kind of the mindset that he was going to be the savior. But when he started, you know, with the beer and, you know, this and that, just like you, I was like, wow, they're actually going to go the opposite way. And I actually got scared there for a minute. I'm like, great, AJ's going to join Aces and Eights, and, like, Jeff Hardy's going to be the TNA savior. And especially when he hit Angle. And then all of a sudden, he goes after Aces and Eights, and it was like, you know what, that whatever it was, 40, maybe 50 seconds, you know, maybe a minute and a half, that you thought he went heel. And it's going to be interesting where it plays out. You know, I've never seen an Angle AJ match live, but I've watched a bunch of them, so I believe Toph in saying that they'll steal the show on Sunday. You know, and where he goes from there is going to be very interesting. I would imagine the recruiting of him back to TNA will probably be something, as we'll see closer, maybe to Bound for Glory. I just hope it doesn't take the same route that it did with Sting, where Hogan's offering him, like, a match with Doc, a match with Knox, a match with Ken Anderson, a match with D.Va, you know. I just don't do that.
Yeah, I don't think that'll happen quite that way. I think somehow, some way, though, they will build it towards AJ Styles getting that shot at the TNA World Championship and still not having any kind of allegiance.
Here's the question, though, guys. The Bound for Glory series is still going on this year. That's the wild card.
Right, yeah, that's true. That's a good point. I'm not saying he'll win it at Bound for Glory necessarily, but I think when he does win it, eventually at some point in time, it'll be kind of cool because I don't think he'll have an allegiance. I still don't think he'll have it. I think he'll be a man standing alone and defending that thing. I think that's where he'll really turn into a star.
I actually, and I said this with Toph last week on Oh You Didn't Know, is I could see whoever wins the Bound for Glory series being taken out leading into Bound for Glory, or maybe even at Bound for Glory, and Bully being like, haha, you got no one, you got no one. And that's when Hogan's like, I need an opponent for him. And that's when AJ steps up, and that's how they kind of get around the whole, you know, he's not supposed to get a title shot, you know, for like 1 year from last year. That'd be a great way to just have him step in as Bully's cutting that promo that you know Bully's going to be able to cut, you know, talking about how there's no one left on the roster, there's no one for him to beat. He's beat them all. Hogan won't face him. And then all of a sudden, AJ just comes in and, you know, takes the belt off. And that would just be, pardon the pun, a phenomenal end to Bound for Glory and a way to kind of get AJ with the belt still kind of by himself, because whoever won the Bound for Glory series is going to want their shot at the title, so that's the TNA side of it. Bully's going to want his belt back, being on the Aces and Eights side of it, and you still can keep AJ in that kind of mystique, you know, presence, kind of.
Well, let's talk about this, since you guys brought up the Bound for Glory series, which is probably going to kick off pretty soon, right? So it should be getting kicked off in the next couple weeks or something, right?
Yeah, right now they're doing this gut check thing where they're getting like different people from gut check, and they're doing this little elimination thing, and in the end one of them's going to get a slot. So after some anniversary on Sunday, we should be seeing it start next week. So
all right, so let's go with this. I'll start with TLD and get your word in here, man. If that's the case, if there's going to be a deal where somebody wins the Bound for Glory series, if they work in AJ Styles or not, really doesn't matter. But who would you choose to win the Bound for Glory series, just assuming Bully Ray is still champion come Bound for Glory?
Well, if AJ Styles is in it, it's kind of obvious that he's going to win. I just don't see any reason why they would put anybody else in that spot. Unless Bully Ray loses the championship before Bound for Glory. I don't know the exact, or I don't know. I mean, maybe AJ, maybe they're going to save the AJ Styles for another pay-per-view. Maybe they're not going to do it at Bound for Glory. Maybe they'll do something different. You know, because if AJ Styles, technically he can't really be in the Bound for Glory series because he technically won't have it. I mean, I don't know. It's a little confusing. That's confusing.
It is confusing.
I don't know what. It's a little confusing.
It's like a Royal Rumble 2003 deal where it's like, you know, oh wait, I said 2003, I meant 2004. Like Benoit won the Rumble, but Michaels and HB and Triple H, their match went to a draw, so there was no winner. So
right.
It looks like we might get like a triple threat this year or something.
I mean, they could do that, and that's fine. Actually, I don't mind the triple threat, you know, because he's not guaranteed a shot anyway. They're only saying he can't go for the belt till Bound for Glory.
Right, he's not eligible.
Right, that's what they really mean. So you got to look at it that way. That he's not allowed to get a title shot till maybe after Bound for Glory. So I'm thinking that if anything, if Bully Ray was to win at Bound for Glory, beat to whoever the person was, AJ Styles is the next guy to go for it. So I can't see a reason why it doesn't necessarily mean that AJ's going to have a title shot.
Well, one thing they could do is if they want to continue to play this AJ being a neutral force where he's not TNA and he's not Aces and Eights, what they could do is do a three-way with each person representing whatever, Bully representing Aces and Eights, AJ representing the neutral, and whoever would represent TNA. The only question is who. I don't think having Hardy win again would be good.
Hardy's one of the only people that makes money probably for that company, only because of the merchandise.
He makes money, but you got to think about it from a storyline continuity standpoint, too. Like, does Jeff Hardy, does he truly represent TNA? Like, think about this from a storyline standpoint. Like, if you were to get three people, like let's take this seriously, Bully being Aces and Eights, AJ being neutral, look at the current roster. Who would you put in that third slot? Me, personally,
well,
I'd probably say Rude.
That's
right.
Yep.
But he's been in that tag division. Until we find out who's in the Bound for Glory series,
I really can't say.
Because
we have to see who's in it.
In there. Right. We don't know who's in it right now, so we have to wait and see on that. But if they are, I mean, we did see Abyss come back. Don't be surprised if maybe Abyss might be a character they might put in that Bound for Glory series, because he did come back as a big surprise a couple weeks ago. I wouldn't be shocked if even they put him against Bully Ray. That's something still, I think, fresh that would be really good, too.
One thing I hope we see in the Aces and Eights, we're starting to see some signs of it with the whole D'Lo thing, is people keep comparing Aces and Eights to NWO. The one thing that every big faction has in common is somewhere down the line, eventually, someone in the faction starts to get a little over and maybe considers taking over the group for himself. You know, the best example being the Wolfpack of the NWO. There needs to be somebody in Aces and Eights that thinks that they can run it better than Bully. But, you know, if you look at the current crop of stars, none of them are really believable. So, I guess
Anderson's
actually starting that right now. He's actually starting to motivate. He was in the background for a long time. And I thought he could be a standout guy in that group. And now he's finally getting that push to that that point. So, I would say I could see that happening where he could. Sorry, my cat just knocked down water on the ground. I got a mess in my apartment, damn it.
Well, all right. This is what I think. I think you guys made some great points. I think that's perfectly clear. We have to wait to see who is in the Bound for Glory series, of course. But I think it would be smart if they did what Tove said. If they're going to go triple threat, if that's going to be the route they would go, I think it would be beneficial to kind of have a TNA guy, Bully Ray as an Ace and Ace guy, and then AJ Styles. And don't forget, that there's always that possibility that the Hulkster himself can kind of insert his way into this a little bit and put himself in the world title match, although I doubt
Dear God,
it. I don't
no.
think it'll happen. Well, you know, there's been speculation, and you never know with Hogan. You never know what he'll do. So, especially with his hand now after that. Did everyone see the picture of his hand? Holy shit.
Yeah.
Poor Summer.
Yeah,
bitch.
I didn't see that.
Oh, Will, you got to go see it, dude. Hogan, like, the other day, I guess it was Sunday or something, a radiator blew up on his hand. And so just the blisters he had, just all, it was just disgusting. He had to get rushed to the hospital. It was absolutely brutal. So, best wishes go out to the Hulkster in a speedy recovery. It was just vicious. But, all right, well, there's a lot going on. I don't know what's going to happen on Impact this week. I don't really look at spoilers. I'm not into that kind of garbage. So I'm excited to watch it, though. Don't forget, if you're an Impact fan, you watch it live. It's on at 9 p.m. Eastern time this week. They have changed their time slot once again. Back to the old time slot for TNA Impact. Moving along with the show a little bit.
Do you think that's going to hurt them, or do you think that's going to help them?
I don't think it's going to really affect it at all. I think that they're going to stay at like a 0.8, 0.9 rating, whatever they get. I don't think it's going to affect it in any way, shape, or form. But it probably should, but I just don't see it happening.
You'll get some people that will read the spoilers heading, because they're going to start taping at 8 o'clock. You're going to get some people that are going to read the spoilers of the first hour and decide if it's a show worth them watching. So what TNA is going to need to do is they're going to have to put one or two major segments into that first hour. So for people who do read spoilers, to want to see it.
Yeah, I don't understand. Why would you change to 9 o'clock if you're not going to go on live? If you're going to have an hour delay, what is the point? So Austin Aries doesn't crotch a female announcer again? Like I don't get it. I don't understand the point.
Well, I think they had the whole Bellator thing going on with that. And I don't know if they didn't do well with Bellator or not, but they've been off TV for a while. So I'm curious where that went, you know, because they were building that whole Bellator thing up pretty big. Timo has not even been seen on TNA since he got knocked out right on Bellator. So I don't know if it's something to do with that slot maybe not making them money or, I mean, I'm not sure. But, you know, I think the 9 to 11 is at least better for me because I can get home in time because I don't read any Impact spoilers because I like to watch Impact, you know, on my own. SmackDown I can watch spoilers on, but Impact is their only show, really. I like to keep that clean. I don't like to be spoiled by anything.
Right. Well, that's the thing. It remains to be seen what's going to happen. I don't think, especially with summer rolling around, and like I alluded to earlier, a lot of people have other things to do. Wrestling really isn't a priority for all the fans out there. I just don't think that Impact is going to, no matter how good the show is, if the show is great, I don't really think the ratings will reflect on it this summer. I know last year, Impact had a phenomenal summer. Their summer was awesome. The Austin Aries.
Yeah, they were great.
They were live every week, though.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I think being live.
I thought that last year was really like the prime example of TNA criticizers. A lot of times TNA criticizers are like the boy that cried wolf. You know, the boy that cries wolf keeps complaining and he keeps saying, I want you to do this, this, and this. And then when you finally do it, you know, the boy still cries. I thought that, I thought that what WWE was doing last summer was horrible. I stopped watching entirely because they had that, remember that predictable Big Show turn that everybody saw coming? Even casual fans saw it coming. They had the Johnny Ace thing. CM Punk was like a European champion opening up every show. I mean, he was putting on great matches with Daniel Bryan, but it was like They just wouldn't allow them to just have a match over who's the best wrestler. They had to introduce AJ, and then they introduced Kane. And meanwhile, TNA was reviving the X Division. They were doing a thing with Bobby Roode. That was before the Aces and Eights was getting too crazy. The tag team division was still relevant. I thought their TV was great last summer. Their impacts were consistently better than Raw every week, but the fans still didn't watch. And, you know, they finally created a new guy in Austin Aries. Well, he was already an established guy, but they finally pushed a new young rising talent. That was great TV, and criticizers didn't watch. And then when Jeff Hardy won, all of a sudden those criticizers started bitching and moaning. I'm like, well, if you watched during the summer, then maybe Aries will still be champ. That's the prime example. So TNA criticizers can, you know, they can eat a banana.
Well, that's the thing, man. I watch the show every week, no matter what. And I'm back and forth with TNA. You know, I'm back and forth with WWE, too. You know, I like to support what I like. I'll trash what I don't like, whatever. But last Sunday was great for TNA. I admit it, 100%. I enjoyed it. I didn't even mind that Jeff Hardy won the strap. I was, if you go back and listen to those shows, I was calling it. I called it freaking months in advance that Jeff Hardy was going to win the belt at Bound for Glory for Austin Aries. It made sense in the context of business. So I wasn't one to trash it. However, there are times, and we can all admit to this, that TNA, they just don't put out a quality product. It happens. And that's where, you know, your inconsistency reflects in the rating. They don't have the time to be inconsistent. I mean, everybody saw the picture of the crowd from Impact. Like, a lot of people say, yeah, everybody got up and went to the bathroom because the knockouts were on. But, dude, there was nobody in that picture, man. There was, I can probably count with my finger the amount of people that were in that picture at Impact last week. And it was pretty sad. It was pretty poor. It was a horrible, horrible photo. So that kind of stuff is alarming. If you're going to go on the road and bring Impact around the country, you need to be more consistent. And if you can do angles like you did last week and kind of have solid matches, because like I said, I enjoyed last week's show. The previous week, I didn't. So it's like it's back and forth, but that's the way it is in professional wrestling. It's just when TNA, after 10 years, is still building their brand, they haven't established it yet, man. And the problem with it is their marketing. Nobody, these casual fans that you alluded to, so the people that'll, you know, not watch it during the summer, they're not watching it because TNA hasn't given them a reason to watch in their minds. It hasn't been consistent enough over a long period of time to get them to watch. And that all that goes back to the mid-2000s when Vince Russo was booking, when Dutch Mantel was there, when Jeff Jarrett was there. That all ties into today, all that stuff. All those fans that were jaded back then, who maybe didn't like John Cena and would turn on a TNA Impact. If the show sucks, they're not going to come back and watch it. So that's the thing. They need to get the casual fan more than anything. That's what they need. They need the casual fan because I'm almost certainly convinced that the majority of the TNA audience are like Internet Smart Mark fans. There's no doubt about it in my mind. But that still can come with time. As long as they can stay afloat, I keep hearing these statistics that they're losing money, that they're giving Hulk Hogan like $16,000 or something per appearance, some crazy number like that. And I wouldn't be surprised at all if they are. But to me, if you're giving one talent $16,000 every single show he shows up on, how can you be profitable? It doesn't really make any sense. And for whatever investment they put into Hulk Hogan, and don't get me wrong, I'm a huge Hulk Hogan supporter. Here in my office, I have a picture of myself blown up with Hulk Hogan on the wall. I love Hulk Hogan. But if that investment isn't paying off, you know, you've tried everything. You've had Russo, you've had Hogan, you've had Bischoff, you've had all these masterminds of professional wrestling's past. Maybe it's time to go with somebody new. I don't know, man. You see Brother Love in charge right now. It's just, I feel like there needs to be a fresh mind. And no, I'm not talking about Dave Sapolsky from Ring of Honor Pass or whatever he's doing, Drag Me in USA now, whatever the hell. I'm not talking about a guy like him. I'm talking about, you know, give somebody, I'm not saying a fan, I'm saying like a well-educated person that works backstage, maybe at TNA, that wants to be a writer, that's striving, maybe he's in his mid-20s, has a fresh mind and fresh work ethic, give them the book. You don't have to have a proven track record to book professional wrestling. It's just, that's just not the way, you don't need that. And you don't need a fucking writing team. That's the problem with both companies right now. I watched a shoot with Vince Russo recently where he talked about, you know, I will not go back to wrestling if the writing teams are the way they are. If that structure is the same way, Vince Russo will not come back. And I'm sure a lot of fans are happy with that. They probably don't want to see him come back. But he has a valid point. You have a writing team where you have five or more writers sitting in a room bumping around ideas, everybody telling the talent something different, everybody having a different vision, instead of one or two guys having a similar vision trying to get to a goal. And I think overall, that's just not the problem with TNA. It's a problem with WWE as well in a lot of ways. But after that rant, I'm just going to move along here because I kind of have the show segmented up. We've already got a half hour in, and I want to get to a little bit of Monday Night Raw. And speaking of, you know, writing teams that kind of, if there's a different vision from everybody sitting in that room, I guarantee you when these guys and girls, the college graduates, TV writers, whatever they are bumping around ideas, none of them are watching fucking WrestleMania 4 on their couch. There's no chance of that happening. So it's like you need a fresh view. And what we've been seeing in the WWE right now, you've got a mix of these old school ideas, like with Cena and Ryback, where you're having stipulation after stipulation in a world title feud. We've seen this happen countless times. But then you have these new talents. You got the Shield, you know, winning all the belts, putting on fantastic matches week in and week out. You've got the emergence of Curtis Axel, who we talked about last week. And he put on another pretty good match this week with John Cena, quietly, which I think is the only problem with it. He's quietly 2-0 against Triple H and Cena. Then you got the Wyatt family, who's debuting soon. And that's who I want to talk about right now. I'm sure everybody saw that clip last night of the Wyatt family as Bray Wyatt, Luke Harper, and I'm not going to lie, I'm not sure the other dude's name. But it was
Eric
creepy.
Rowland.
Okay, there you go. It was creepy and it was pretty fucking cool. So, John, since you knew his name and you're the first one, what were your thoughts on that creepy vignette last night for the Wyatt family debuting?
I love it. I watch NXT on Hulu Plus, and it is without a doubt the best show either company is putting out there right now. And they're going to be phenomenal. Wyatt is amazing on the stick. The act is over. Harper and Rowland are a great team together. They're going to be a big bruising team. You know, Wyatt, the only thing I guess I'm disappointed with is Wyatt is probably not going to get to win the NXT title, which is fine if the trade-off is that we get to see him on Raw. You know, he's slimmed down a little from 2 years ago. I'm telling you, this is going to be good. The only thing I'm interested in now is you've got the Shield as a three-man group with all the belts. These guys are coming in as a three-man group. Rowland and Brody Lee, Luke Harper, are the tag champs in NXT. So, you know, you're going to bring them up with some fanfare. I wonder if we eventually see maybe some sort of feud between these guys and the Shield, and it'd be really interesting with how over the concept of Wyatt is and how quietly you're starting to hear it with the Shield. I wonder who would be, I guess, come off a little more facetious. So it's going to be fun. You know, just keep playing these vignettes. These vignettes, they have a bunch of them that they've been playing on NXT. Just keep playing them for about a month and then slowly let these guys come up, and they're gonna be money.
Cool. Yeah, I haven't seen much of them, but I saw a few vignettes back in the early days when the Bray Wyatt gimmick was first started to get going on NXT. I saw those vignettes, and I thought it was cool back then, but I've yet to see him perform, and I did notice how he's slimmed down a lot. The guy looks like he's in great shape, and that's good for him, man, because you don't want that Samoa Joe syndrome. You don't want to keep putting on weight. You want to keep that weight down. How about you, Tolst? I don't know if you saw this vignette. It's been all over Facebook today. What were your thoughts on it?
Yeah, it didn't do anything for me. Hopefully he proves me wrong when he debuts.
All right, yeah. It's kind of, I don't know if you guys have seen Cape Fear, the old Robert De Niro movie. Kind of reminds me of that a little bit. And also, if you go back and watch those old Waylon Mercy promos from the mid-90s, kind of has that little vibe to it as well. It's kind of creepy and weird. How about you, Will? What were your thoughts on the Wyatt family and their impending debut?
Yeah, even... It was definitely creepy to watch that. You know, the only thing I'm concerned right now is they already have a three-man group, and to have another heel three-man group kind of might hurt the Shield in a way. So that's the only thing I'm kind of having a gripe about it right now, is that the three guys, it's the same thing. It's like, it's a Shield again. You know, that's the only thing. It's just the same three-man group from NXT coming up. You know, heel guys, I mean, definitely creepy guys, you know, from the videos, you know. It's like, you would not bring your little girl around those three guys, you know, because you have no idea what the frick they're going to do. But, you know, we'll see, we'll let it play out, you know. I mean, but I like the promo. I think the idea of the promo was good, because when, you know, someone, like my girlfriend, is sitting here watching it, like, it's creeped out by that. You know, obviously, someone who doesn't watch wrestling, obviously, it does something to you. Like, you know, oh, I don't want to, those three guys, I don't even want to freaking see them, you know, coming down the aisle. They're freaking, like, creeping me out, you know. So that's what I liked about the promo, but I'm just worried it might hurt the Shield at the end of the day.
That's always a possibility. I kind of see WWE leaning more towards factions now. I think it would probably be a pretty good idea at this point in time, since you have so many, they have so many people on these rosters when you count. I mean, Raw and SmackDown aren't really separate anymore, but with NXT, you've got just a loaded roster. So if they start incorporating some more stables, I don't really have too much of a problem with that. You do need a babyface stable at some point in time if you're going to do that. And I kind of like your idea too, John, of maybe turning the Shield face down the line a little bit. I think that would work. I've been saying it from the beginning. I think, aside from Ambrose, I see Ambrose being a great heel for a long, long time. I think Rollins and Reigns have babyface money written all over them. But that remains to be seen if that's ever going to happen. Probably will at some point, but who knows. And how about this, guys? Big news last night. Awesome segment, I thought, from Paul Heyman and Chris Jericho on the highlight reel. It looks like Chris Jericho will be taking on a returning CM Punk at WWE Payback coming up on June 16th. And that was a little bit of a surprise for me. I didn't see it coming. But before we get to that, we're going to take a phone call, which is pretty awesome. We got a caller. How about the 425 area code, 425. You're on the air with PWP Radio. What's your name? Where are you from?
Hey, this is Max from Wrestling with Subtitles.
Hey, Max, how you doing, brother? Congratulations, by the
congratulations.
Way. Congratulations. On, yeah, achieving your goal of getting subtitles now on all WWE and TNA releases. That's awesome news, man.
Thanks, guys. I was actually calling in because you guys posted up on Twitter about the Wyatt family, yeah?
Yeah, absolutely. We were talking about the vignette last night.
Oh, man, I am such a big fan of Bray Wyatt and his family. When the promo aired, I was giddy like a schoolgirl. Bray Wyatt is the perfect character, and is exactly what the WWE needs right now.
It's something completely different than anything else that's on the show. One of the main complaints about WWE is that a lot of the guys that come up from developmental look exactly the same. They kind of have that cookie-cutter look to them, you know, the nice tan, the kind of chiseled physique, the black trunks, whatever it is. And they all have a similar look. Like, if you look at Curtis Axel, he kind of looks like Ted DiBiase. He kind of looks like, you know, a bunch of other guys as well. They all kind of look the same. And it's kind of cool. They have this group of three just weird-looking dudes that will definitely, if someone's flipping through the channels, I think they will get your attention real quick.
Yeah, I definitely think that they won't be pushed to the stars like the Shield has been, but I definitely think that they're in line for some sort of major shakeup, especially with Triple H's push of the younger talent recently. All of his moves he's doing with NXT. I think that the future of the WWE has never looked brighter. And the Shield and the family with Bray Wyatt are definitely big signs of that.
Yeah, I can't agree more with you. And that's something else that I heard. Somebody told me this. I'm not sure if it's true or not. That Triple H does not want NXT talent debuting on Monday Night Raw unless there's some kind of solid plan for that talent. And I think we've kind of seen that with the Shield and with Curtis Axel and guys like that. I think it's smart, and I'm looking forward to the Wyatt family officially debuting on the main show. Thanks a lot for calling, Max. We appreciate it. Once again, congratulations on getting subtitles on all wrestling DVDs from TNA and WWE.
Thanks, guys. You have a good show now.
Thanks, man. You too. Take care. All right, that was Max. I don't know if you guys know, but he has had this campaign going on for over a year now. It's been going on for a while. You could follow him on Twitter at WrestleSubtitle. He's just wanted to get subtitles on DVDs for the hearing impaired, and TNA jumped on board a few months ago, and it just turns out that WWE has now jumped on board, and he's had guys like Dolph Ziggler fighting for the cause as well. So it's a really cool cause. We've actually had him on the network before.
Yeah, he was on Oh You Didn't Know.
Exactly. Yeah.
Cool guy.
And, nice dude. Definitely a nice dude. And thank him for calling. So thanks a lot for calling, Max. All right. So the Wyatt family, I was going to get to Punk Jericho, and I'll kick it off with TLD here. CM Punk's returning to his hometown in Chicago, Illinois. What were your thoughts on CM Punk, the announcement of CM Punk versus Chris Jericho?
It was a very nice surprise. It was actually nice to hear CM Punk's name again. you know, being mentioned. He's been off for a while, you know, and Jericho, of all people, to bring him up, you know. It was a great confrontation between Paul Heyman and CM, you know, and Chris Jericho. You know, that's, to me, you know, with CM Punk being in his hometown, there's not another person in that company that would maybe cheer except for Chris Jericho, because he is over everywhere he goes. It doesn't matter where he goes, he's over. And I think that's the, he was the only opponent that if there was CM Punk versus somebody, that Jericho would get a positive reaction as much as CM Punk does. So I like the idea of having those two fight each other. So Jericho's away from the Fandango now. He's moving on. And this could be, you know, there's not going to be much build-up to it, but it really doesn't need that. I think that whole segment sold that match to me without anything. Even though they've had that match before last year, to me it's still like it's something different, because now they're in reverse roles now. So I think it's going to work out pretty well.
Yeah,
I did Twitter last night. I said that match alone is just worth buying the show.
Yeah, you know what? I think you're right, man. And there's always the possibility that, and I wrote about this on ProWrestlingPowerhouse.com if you want to check it out. Chris Jericho is the type of guy that's always reinventing himself and always doing something different. I see the possibility of a double turn at Payback. I'm not saying it's going to happen, but I see a slight possibility of some kind of double turn at the show. Maybe Punk turns babyface, Jericho turns heel. I don't know. It could happen. Just saying. Toph, what are your thoughts on CM Punk making his big return at WWE Payback?
I hope he doesn't come back. I hope it's a swerve and it just leads to Curtis Axel versus Jericho. I don't want to see Punk on TV anymore, and their last feud was horrible. So, yeah.
Wow, man. Why not? Dude, what's the issue with Punk?
The dude had the title for over 400 days. I'm tired of looking at him. He needs to go away. I don't want WWE to blow their load on Punk again. That's what ruined his reign the first time. These guys need to be away and let the fans miss them. Let us miss their characters. This dude hasn't even been gone for 2 months yet. Let him just go away. I have no interest in Punk. I hope this turns out to be Jericho and Axel.
The overwhelming crowd response to him last night when his name was brought up by Jericho, though, the CM Punk chants raining throughout the building, I think that kind of shows that the fans kind of do want to see him come back. And the show has kind of, I don't know if it's really been hurt without him, but just he's been around consistently for so long that I'm sure the fans are kind of clamoring for him to come back in some way, shape, or form. But from now until Payback, I do see Chris Jericho and Curtis Axel working together, and I won't doubt that Curtis Axel, you know, gets his 3-0 mark by a win over Jericho, probably once again by count out. JC,
Punk, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, go ahead. Tell us what you
going to say. I was saying, well, fans can miss Punk all they want. I'm tired of him. I just want to know, where is Christian? See, you guys have been waiting for Punk to come back for 2 months. I've been waiting for Christian to come back for nearly a year now. Where is he? When is he coming back?
I don't know, man. Maybe he's, I don't know. Maybe he, like, Chris Dunlop's his family. I don't know what the fuck he's doing. No idea. That was a horrible joke, but no clue.
That was a terrible joke, by the way.
Yeah, but I don't know what Christian's doing, man. That's just... I'm not sure what the deal is with him. I don't know if he's healthy. I don't know if he's...
he's been cleared since January.
Hey, man, maybe he has some kind of setback. It's really a tough call. Maybe he's not coming back to TV. Maybe they're going to keep him on board as some kind of backstage agent. You know, maybe he's just one of those guys like a Dean Malenko who just kind of like quietly retires and nothing really happens.
I hope
not. I don't know.
Well,
man.
Later in the show, I would like to explain the perfect way to bring him back, because I know the perfect way to bring him back.
Okay, yeah, we'll definitely go back and talk about that momentarily. And a lot of there was a We Want Christian Twitter thing last night, too. A lot of people were hashtagging that and talking about it all night long. But, JCD, while we're on Punk, your thoughts on the Punk-Jericho match at Payback and what you think will come out of it? I see some foreshadowing, possible turn with Paul Heyman involved.
Yeah, I don't think it's happening. I really don't. I think this is going to be the type of thing where Heyman speaking for Punk... And I think what's going to happen is I think Punk's going to be like, what are you doing eventually? You know, that Heyman's just talking for Punk without talking to Punk. I think it's going to end up being Jericho Axel. at the pay-per-view. I think they're going to tease it, though, as if Punk's going to be there. And in Chicago, they're going to play Cult of Personality, and he's not going to come out. Heyman's going to come out with some stupid excuse. Axel will come out. Axel will beat Jericho. Doesn't even have to beat him by countout because Jericho will put him over.
Yeah.
And I think this leads to, and I've said it back in, I think, pre-WrestleMania when I did my SummerSlam prediction card on the site, I have Punk coming back as a face for SummerSlam. So
yeah,
I don't think Punk's coming back
too.
This early.
Yeah, my biggest argument, why would Punk come back at this unknown B-show pay-per-view? Build it up. It just seems so unnecessary.
I mean, don't get me wrong. Jericho's comments were great last night, and if you followed Punk actually responded to him on Twitter. Punk was like, wait a minute, I can't sit on my ass after being champion for 426 days, but you're going to pass judgment on me when you go off and you play your little rock music half the year? Like, Punk did fire back on him on Twitter. But I don't think Punk's coming back for Payback. I don't see it.
Well, see, that'll be a double-edged sword, though. And I get your point. I was kind of thrown off by it a little bit, too. And I don't know if it's WWE panicking because they don't have that necessary star power that they're used to having.
I think that's what it is, Jay. I think they're in Chicago, and they're using the CM Punk draw as a way to get fans to buy because they know, like, oh, you know, Jericho, Punk in Chicago, you know, there's going to be people that's going to buy just because of that.
Yeah.
I think it's a swerve to draw fans in.
But isn't that a double-edged sword where if they don't deliver CM Punk on pay-per-view, aren't fans going to be pissed? You know, I'm sure I would be. I'm not going to be pissed, obviously, but if I was an invested fan, I'd be pretty pissed off.
Well, maybe they'll be like the post-Mania Raw crowd. I mean, Rock, Brock, and Punk weren't there. They were pissed, but they still had a good time, so maybe the crowd will be like that. Let's hope.
Yeah, but unlike post-WrestleMania, those guys didn't show up for, you know, Rock didn't show up because, whatever, he decided that he knew better than everyone else and decided to go home. Lesnar and Punk were creative decisions because of the way the crowd was going. Lesnar more so because Rocky just decided that he runs the show. The difference with this is going to lead to something storyline-wise that, you know, Heyman is putting Punk in these situations without consulting with Punk, and it's going to lead to the turn, unlike the night of after WrestleMania, where it was just, all right, Dwayne went home. Well, we don't need Brock tonight, and we're not putting Punk in front of this crowd. There is a little bit of a difference between the two. If you screw with the crowd for the sake of screwing with them, and then it turns out to be storyline, there's a big difference to me between the two.
I think the biggest disagreement that I have with CM Punk fans is a lot of CM Punk fans keep saying, oh, this is going to lead to the turn. I'm not convinced he was heel to begin with. He never really did anything heelish, to be honest. His promos, you know, really were never heelish. And his mannerisms and his actions outside of the Undertaker thing were never really heelish at all. I don't understand how he was a heel to begin with. He was always getting mixed. Punk is really he's like the anti-Cena. Cena gets mixed reactions in a negative way. Punk gets mixed reactions in a somewhat positive way. Jay, you said it was going to be a double turn. I don't understand. Like, this is going to be in Chicago. Who's the face and who's the heel here? The fans are going to boo Jericho and they're going to cheer Punk. I don't understand. How is Punk a heel? He never really got booed.
I don't know if Jericho would get booed. I agree, whoever said it earlier. I think Jericho's probably the only guy who could walk into this match in Chicago and probably get a split reaction from Punk. You know, there's enough people who love Jericho no matter what his role is, whether he's a heel, whether he's a face. He's the only guy that could probably split that crowd with Punk 50-50.
How can you say CM Punk wasn't a heel? How could you say that? He was insulted.
Because he was never a heel.
He insulted the crowd every week.
No, that heel, let me tell you what the heel.
Put him in his mouth.
I disagree with him being a heel. I just disagree with him being a heel.
You can't base it on crowd reaction if that's what you're going to say.
It didn't make sense. He was a WWE champion. He beat Alberto Del Rio. He called himself the best in the world. And then just randomly out of nowhere, he attacked The Rock. It was like they just realized that Punk wasn't going to be the number one babyface. They realized that Cena was. And so instead of the entire time in Punk's reign, he referred to himself as the best in the world. But when he was first referring to himself as the best in the world, he didn't do it in a way
to condescend the fans. He just proclaimed himself the best in the world. But then after he attacked The Rock, that was when all of a sudden he started, you know, kind of somewhat being condescending in his manner. But, like, his in-ring ability, like, when he wrestles in his matches, he never cheated during anything. Like, that's what I see as a real heel, like Bobby Roode, for example.
He used the Shield to beat Ryback every time. What are you talking about?
Paul Heyman did that, not CM Punk.
Doesn't matter. He went with it. He didn't stop him.
Yeah, but this stuff needs to come out when Punk comes back. I get where Toph is going with this, and this is the stuff that needs to come out. Like, Punk needs to, when Punk comes back, Punk needs to turn around and be like, listen, I never asked you to hire the Shield to help me with Ryback. I never asked you to hire Brad Maddox to help me at Hell in the Cell. You know, I could beat these guys on my own, and now that Ryback's a heel, he could probably do that. Toph's right in that sense, but Punk needs to cut that promo when he... That needs to be the basis of, all right, we won't call it a turn, but his separation from Heyman needs to be about the fact that Heyman pulled all these shenanigans, and at the end of the day, while he was gone, Punk realized he didn't need Heyman to do any of that stuff for him. That's where he needs to cut that promo. He don't cut that promo, Toph, I got to tell you straight out, man, he was from Raw 1000 on, he was a heel.
Okay,
yeah,
I just never saw him as one.
If you would take the WWE roster, right, and you would just have every single name and you just list one everybody as like a heel or a face, CM Punk falls under the heel side because he simply turned on The Rock, went on to have a couple matches with The Rock, you know, wrestled Cena a few times after that. He was showing heel tendencies for a little while. They kind of made you guess on what to do in the first couple of weeks, whether to boo him, whether to cheer him. But it's obvious that he became so loved by the fans during his title run, in the beginning anyway, when he was a full-fledged babyface, I guess you want to call him, especially after the old shoot promo he did. He became so loved that he was almost getting that Stone Cold Steve Austin type of vibe, where he's a heel, you know, in the sense of the word. He's trying to be a heel, but the fans just love him. And like you said, it's the opposite of what Cena has. Cena's trying to be the, you know, clean-cut, smiley babyface, but the fans just rebel against them. And that dynamic is kind of cool, man. There's nothing really wrong with that. And especially in wrestling nowadays, man, think about it. Heel and face, who really gives a shit? It's like, it's dead anyway. It should be dead. It's always going to be there.
You might have a comparison? You might have a little comparison here with this whole heel and face thing? Well, if so John Cena is getting Cena sucks chance. So then shouldn't he be a heel then? Because he's getting chants from the crowd that say he sucks and he's getting booed. So that makes John Cena a heel, right?
Yeah, so I've always felt that way.
So what you basically just said was, okay, well, CM Punk is a face because he's getting cheered. That means John Cena's a heel.
Yeah, I get what you're trying to say, Will. I get it.
But you can't base it on crowd reaction. That's what too many people make a big mistake on what a heel and a face is. Don't base it on the crowd. Base it on the actions of the wrestler and what he's doing. And that's what you got to base it on, but don't base it on crowd reaction. Just because he gets cheered doesn't mean he's a face.
I think my problem is if
you go by that mentality, then the biggest face WrestleMania weekend was Dolph Ziggler.
Really?
The biggest
Come on, how many
of a whole weekend?
If you're going by that mentality of people being cheered for, and I was actually going to your point, Will. How many times during WrestleMania we heard we want Ziggler during multiple matches? How many times during that Raw the
Not
night
all
after?
Matches,
we
only,
want
only during the Alberto Real match.
We want Ziggler, and then the pop when he finally won. And again, this is to Will's point, Ziggler would be considered the biggest face WrestleMania weekend. It's not about, again, crowd reaction. Will's right. The main reason why Punk had to turn heel was because if he would have been a face and everything he would have said about The Rock, which was spot on 100%, Dwayne would have got shitted on at the Royal Rumble. And that's why they had to turn Punk heel. This was all, if he was not slated to face Rock for that title at all, Punk would still be a face heading into WrestleMania 29.
I just didn't like how they gave up on Punk. I didn't like that.
They didn't give up on him. They had to appease the movie star.
They didn't give up on him.
not just that, if you were to give CM Punk the option of whether to work babyface or heel, I will guarantee you he would say to work heel. There was a lot of speculation coming out around that time he turned that he personally realized, hey, I'm not going to be the number one babyface. It's just not going to happen. Although he sold a shitload of merchandise and probably made a lot of money and is still making that kind of money today. But you got to remember, if CM Punk isn't going to be the top babyface, why not be the top effing heel? And that's what I feel accomplished. Although he was still getting cheered, there was a lot of towns out there that were booing him and were saying Punk stuff and whatnot in the crowd. So it depended on a state to state basis what arena you were going to at some points. But great debate on that, guys. Right now I'm going to take a small break. We're going to come back and we're going to talk about it. I want you guys to think. I want you guys, to brainstorm just a little bit. Come up with some favorite summer moments, memories, and matches that you can remember from your past, and we'll talk about that in just a few moments. And after that, we'll end the show with a little bit of talk on Bret the Hitman Hart, and we'll give our favorite moments from Bret Hart. And I loved the Appreciation Night last night, too, by the way. So hang tight, everybody. PWP Radio will be right back.
Betting that you will. No, I'll let you live a little bit with the pain. my brain. You know it's only the beginning.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we're back here on PWP Radio. What a great first hour of the show tonight. We're going 90 minutes live. We talked about a lot. If you want to go back and listen to it, if you missed anything, you can listen to the show right here on blogtalkradio.com/PWP Radio. You can listen to it anytime you want. You can also go on iTunes, type in Pro Wrestling Powerhouse Radio, PWP Radio. We will come up. That's the easiest way to get the show right to your iTunes device, whether it's your iPod, your iPad, or your iPhone. Also, don't forget, folks, just announced, we will be having a Slammiversary post-game show this coming Sunday. Post-game show live here on PWP Radio, Slammiversary style, another Sting main event at Slammiversary. It will be live here on PWP Radio at 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. That is immediately after TNA Slammiversary, and that will be hosted by TLD himself, Will Vasquez. So we're back here on the show, everybody, and we're kicking it off with our favorite matches, moments, and memories from wrestling in the summertime. You can go all the way back to the Great American Bash and some amazing contests that took place during that series. Or you could talk about Bash at the Beach, and what about SummerSlam or Heat Wave? Tons of great shows that revolved around summer, and like I mentioned earlier on when we kicked it off, it's a crucial time for the wrestling business, because everybody's got a lot of shit to do in the summer, and wrestling usually isn't a priority, although it is for us four. So let's kick it off with JCD. Let's get some of your favorite matches, moments, and memories from summertime in wrestling.
Okay, well, first I'll go with the first SummerSlam. And when I was a wee little JCD, I was a huge Ultimate Warrior mark. So when he came out and destroyed the Honky Tonk Man in about 12 seconds at the first SummerSlam, that was awesome. I actually liked the two-week back-to-back in 98 when Austin beat Kane for the title the night after the King of the Ring, and then WCW decided to respond by pulling the trigger on the Goldberg-Hogan match. I always thought that was fun. That was a fun couple of weeks. And you know what? I still think the Summer of Punk was a fun ride 2 years ago.
Yeah, you're talking about that Summer of Punk. There was also a pretty
famous the one in Ring of Honor.
Took place in Ring of Honor. That was actually really cool because it involved guys like Christopher Daniels, guys like Jamie Noble, known as James Gibson back then, Samoa Joe, and some other key names, Colt Cabana as well. Summer of Punk definitely was a cool one, but I really liked also that you mentioned that Austin 1998 summer, which I'm going to talk about right now. Since you mentioned it, I don't want anybody to steal it, but man, did I love the Highway to Hell in 1998. That entire, you know, marketing ploy that WWE had using the AC/DC song, building up to that mega clash between Austin and The Undertaker at SummerSlam 1998 was an amazing moment in wrestling for me. It's something I'll never forget. I loved everything leading up to it, including that tag team Hell in a Cell match where Austin, the cell raised, Austin's beating the shit out of Kane in the ring, and Undertaker's on top of the cage trying to get in, McMahon's raising the cell in the air. Just an amazing angle altogether. Also led to a great ladder match between The Rock and Triple H for the Intercontinental Championship. And one more match I want to bring up is the first time that Sting defeated Ric Flair for the NWA Championship. That was at the Great American Bash in 1990. And folks, if you're a young fan and have never seen that match, awesome, awesome match. They had a lot of great ones, but this one's special because Sting had his first really huge moment in wrestling. You know, Dusty Rhodes was the booker back then, and he was fully aware that Sting was the guy. He was the next guy. He tried to build him up slowly and surely, and he did that. Gave him the TV title. In a short run, wrestling the Great Muta and whatnot. He actually was a member of the Four Horsemen briefly, but this all led somehow, some way, to defeating Ric Flair at Great American Bash 1990. TLD, let's kick it to you, man. Some of your favorite matches, moments, or memories from the summer in professional wrestling.
So match-wise, just because it's fresh in my mind, I just watched the Mick Foley DVD, which was I definitely recommend getting it. I even wore a Socko on my foot, you know, because it's a nice sock to have. But definitely the Hell in the Cell. You can't talk about, you know, that not being one of the biggest moments, memories, and matches all put together. That was one that just gave you everything that you needed to see with the Hell in a Cell with The Undertaker. Another moment I enjoyed was back when I first started watching wrestling in 1991, and that is when the Cobra came out and bit Randy Savage. So that was a big thing. That wasn't really summer, but that did. But the in SummerSlam '91 with the Match Man in Heaven, and then the party where Jake the Snake Roberts did what he did. So that was another big moment in wrestling. Was that? And then, if one more thing I had to talk about was the Jerry Lawler and Bret Hart feud from 1993. They talked a little bit about it last night with Bret Hart Appreciation Night. That was really cool too, because that was just like, I was a big Bret Hart fan. What Jerry Lawler was doing to Bret was just, oh my God. Like, you wanted to strangle Jerry Lawler. Just the amount of things that he was doing. Like, no one would ever get away with the real life that he was saying. Like, you would want to kill that guy. But that was fun. Those are my favorite things that stick out in my mind.
Absolutely. Tony, how about you, man? Some great summer moments, matches, or memories?
First of all, WCW. The summer in general, from 1996 to 1998, just those 3 years, 96, 97, 98, especially 97. I love the build-up to the Outsiders and the Third Man, which originally led to Hogan being revealed as the Third Man and the formation of the New World Order. I loved it in 1997 when WCW took advantage of the whole Chicago Bulls, Utah Jazz thing and the NBA. And, you know, they brought in Dennis Rodman, one of the coolest Nitros ever. It's on YouTube. Just put in NWO Best Entrance. It was like a limo, and it was like Hogan, Hall, Nash, Savage, DiBiase, Bischoff, and Rodman. And they all got out of the limbo. I mean, they got out, and they were smoking on the way to the ring. Just cool stuff. I loved how DDP brought in Karl Malone, and I always remember when Dennis Rodman gave Lex Luger a hip toss, and Randy Savage was just going crazy outside the ring, and the fans were going epic. As far as WWF's concerned, probably have to say SummerSlam 97. A very underrated SummerSlam, in my opinion, was a very solid card. I like the build-up to Bret Hart and The Undertaker and Shawn Michaels being a special guest ref. And, you know, Bret lost. The stipulation was he wouldn't wrestle in America again. And, you know, he had reformed the Hart Foundation. And everyone knows that was when the unfortunate accident with Owen and Austin have the botched pile driver. But Triple H and Mankind had a very underrated opener. It was in a cage match. And it sort of, that to me, that match kind of started the whole three phases of Foley thing, at least in WWE for me. And, yeah, you already went over SummerSlam 98. That was good, too. And I would also like to talk about TNA last year, but we talked about that earlier. I thought their summer, the rejuvenation of the X Division and, you know, Aries finally trading in to become the world champion and ending Rude's reign, that was cool. So, yeah, summer has a lot of cool moments in wrestling.
Absolutely, and it needs to. It needs to have great moments. You know, I go back to 1991, which was Will mentioned before, and one of the greatest matches I've ever seen was on that card, and that was Bret the Hitman Hart versus Mr. Perfect. It was the night where Bret Hart won the Intercontinental Championship for the first time, and Mr. Perfect was just wrestling with a completely bummed back. You know, he went in there and just gave it his all, and it was just such a grueling physical match between the two. They went on to have another classic at King of the Ring 1993. So I know Bret Hart last night at Bret Hart Appreciation Night mentioned Mr. Perfect and everything. And Will, you just sent me a text. I'll let you mention it. You've got one more, don't you?
Yeah, this one I have to say was of last year, of all the shows and everything I watched last year, this is the one YouTube clip that I always go back to, and that was Raw 1000. That show, you know, even though we say what the best pay-per-view of the year was, or the best show of the year was Raw 1000. There's no comparison to anything else that year that could compare to that show.
Yeah, it was a fun show. It was one of those things you'll remember for a long time. Kicked off at the DX reunion and whatnot. Definitely a great way to celebrate your 1,000th episode. And they also kicked off their 3-hour Raws, which seemed to have, you know, kind of a mixed reaction from here on. But, you know, it started kind of a little bit of a new era, although things did kind of stay the same. Now, summertime is crucial. Toph, you mentioned the NWO, and that to me is definitely the biggest moment that ever took place because it completely reshaped the face of professional wrestling. That, of course, took place at Bash at the Beach. And those WCW concepts, like Great American Bash, Bash at the Beach, they kind of held great spot in professional wrestling history. And WWE did bring the Great American Bash concept and shortened it to the Bash, and they used it for a few years there, and I thought it was a great idea. But I remember there being some kind of story at some point that maybe Bash at the Beach was going to make some kind of return to the WWE. I think it was speculated by one of the Dirt Sheet guys or something along those lines. But I'll kick it off to JCD first. Would it be smart if WWE brought back a summer-themed show in this day and age?
Well, that's what SummerSlam is, though.
Yeah, I know that. I get that.
With the whole tagline being the biggest party of the summer. So to do another one, I get where you're going with it, with either bringing back the Great American Bash again or even Bash at the Beach or even Road Wild. I think being that, to do that twice in a three-month span, I think it's overkill.
Yeah, I can add on to that, Jay, though.
Yeah, even if they did it on, not even at the pay-per-view, but if they had like a, because they're high on these special Monday Night Raws. And they always did something cool in WCW where they kind of went outdoors. They even had the show a couple years in a row outside on a beach, if I remember
correctly.
Yeah,
correct.
I remember seeing Savage versus Flair on an actual beach. And those are cool, innovative concepts that WCW really had over WWE at the time. And I personally think it would be beneficial. I mean, hell, why not bring, since Hurricane Sandy hit over here, why not bring a show to the Jersey Shore, do it outdoors? I think it would be pretty awesome, pretty unique. We know WWE is a little bit too big of a company now to kind of do that. They're more concerned about getting 20,000 people inside an arena than getting a few, I don't know, maybe 2,000 outside
on the beach.
Gotta
make money, man. That's what it's all about.
And
I can give you an extension of that, though.
But, what about you, Toph? What's your idea on it?
Well, you know, what JCD said, you know, pretty much stands true. The biggest problem is, you know, the Great American Bash and Bash at the Beach, you know, they're pretty much a celebration of the summer, and WWE has SummerSlam, so to have them both at the same time would kind of be redundant. Yeah, that too. It would be kind of redundant. But I could definitely, I don't see any reason why they couldn't have, like, a Raw or maybe a live SmackDown special and call that, like, the SmackDown Bash at the Beach and basically do everything you just said. But this is kind of a little off topic, but you were talking about WWE bringing back themed things. I see no reason why they can't bring back Halloween Havoc and incorporate that into WWE in October. I know we're talking about the summer. The reason I'm choosing Halloween Havoc is consistently every year, that seems to be when the interest of wrestling, particularly in WWE, is at its lowest, because it's like it's too early for Mania build-up, and it's too late for SummerSlam build-up. So you're just kind of in the middle. They have two pay-per-views in October, which is stupid. They have Hell in a Cell, and they always have some other pay-per-view. Like, I think it's, what was it last year? I don't even know what it was last year.
They only had one. Yeah, they only had one last year. But, yeah, for, like, about 2-3 years, they would do two in, like, a three-week span.
But they killed that last year. Yeah, I think that Halloween Havoc would be a great gimmick because it would actually appeal to kids. I remember WCW used to have a lot of Halloween Havoc merchandises. I remember all the Slim Jim commercials of Randy Savage and the Pumpkins, and they're PG, too. Think of all the stuff they could get away with. It would be great. I think that if they brought back Halloween Havoc, it would make, I'm positive, it would make way more money than whatever pay-per-view they're doing now. But that's just a thought process that I've always felt.
It's a great idea. I mean, they did a Halloween-themed Raw, I guess it was 2 years ago or something, and they had, like, the Muppets on it or something along those lines. But it really didn't have, like, a Halloween theme at all. It was kind of just, hey, Raw's on Halloween, let's call it a Halloween-themed Raw. But I think that's a great idea if you brought back Halloween Havoc. I always loved that concept. I thought WCW always tried to do something really different with that, you know? And that's what I liked about WCW, and I'm not going to get off topic, but they kind of weren't afraid to really push the envelope and use some different ideas, even if they were horrible, like a coal miner's glove or something like that. But since last night was Bret Hart Appreciation Night, and all of us pretty much grew up watching Bret Hart, and we've all seen tons of his matches, and regardless of what you think, he is one of the all-time greats. No question about that at all. So I watched it last night, and I enjoyed it. It was great, and Bret Hart was always one of my favorites. He's actually number one on my top wrestler of all time list. And it was cool seeing that, man. He had some real emotion last night, and it was just very nice to watch. So I want to talk about some of our favorite Bret Hart moments. And, Will, I'm going to kick it to you first. I know you're a Bret Hart fan, and he just has provided so many great matches. So what are some of your favorite Bret Hart moments or matches?
We've already talked about it, but the match that first got me into wrestling was the Bret Hart Mr. Perfect match at WrestleMania. You talk about a match that I could watch anytime, any day of the week. It's just a fun match to watch and just an art form of what pro wrestling really is. And you wish that you could put on a match like that, but you just never can because it's just so good to watch and see. It's just awesome. So that to me was one of my favorite moments with that moment. And then going forward with Bret Hart, you know, the Jerry Lawler storyline was fun to watch with that. I thought that was great. And then going beyond that, when he was doing the whole Canadian thing, you know, against the U.S., that was a really interesting thing because you never seen where Bret Hart could look like a hero in one spot, but then when you go to another town, he's a heel, you know, so which was interesting because that's kind of like the thing where Bret Hart really, he was kind of a tweener in one spot, and then, you know, was Bret Hart a heel or Bret Hart a face? You know, he really, you know, go back to our discussion earlier, that was a situation that just never really happened. And, you know, it's just a pretty cool thing that Bret Hart did when he got involved with that storyline. And you can't, and with that, it all talks about, you know, the Stone Cold Steve Austin and Bret Hart match, the double change right there. That was pretty cool, too.
Yeah, no, absolutely, man. There were just a lot of cool moments from Bret's career. How about you, Toph? Favorite moments, memories, or matches from Bret Hart's career?
Yeah, I really wasn't a Bret person growing up. I was more of a WCW guy.
Shame on you.
Honest. Hey, like I said, I live in Georgia, dude. WWF never came down here. So, yeah, that's just how it was. The only memory I really have of Bret was I vividly remember his matches with Stone Cold. Actually, one of the first WWF pay-per-views I saw, I never forget. I was a huge World War III fan. I don't know if you guys remember that pay-per-view where they had the three rings.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to see that pay-per-view, but there was some problem with the cable company at the time, and we weren't able to get it. And so instead, we saw Survivor Series 96, and I was disappointed as a kid because I didn't watch WWF. But I ended up enjoying the show, and I remember Bret Hart's feud with Stone Cold. I knew who Stone Cold was because I knew him as Stunning Steve Austin. And, you know, I watched this match with Bret, and they had a really good match at Madison Square Garden, and then their feud continued. The crazy thing was is that Stone Cold never beat Bret, but he still got over. Bret gave him the rub. So I remember their feud, and pretty much that and Bret Hart in general in 97. Unfortunately, by the time I started watching Bret in WWF, he was already on his way out. So, yeah.
Well, yeah, man. That's cool because they don't really bump in or talk to too many people who are actually – in the South, and we got to witness that firsthand where WWF would not go down there and there were more of a WWF.
They came here one time in 94. They did not come here again until WCW got No, actually, I take that back. They came here in 94, and then I remember they had a Raw here in 99. And
October
it was in Atlanta.
99.
Yeah, and then after that, they never came here again until WCW went defunct. And then they had, I think the Royal Rumble was in Atlanta in 2002. Right?
Yep.
Yeah, so, yeah, WWF, they did not come down here, and that upset me as a kid, but now I realize, well, I was in the heart of WCW country, so that's why.
Yeah, well, see, I always had PBS, so I could watch WCW all the time. But we just got a call real quick, and I'm going to take the call. Well, we got about 11 minutes left in the show. 281 area code, 281, you're on the air with PWP Radio. What's your name? Where are you from?
Man, what's up, man? This is Ronnie.
What's going on, Ronnie?
How you doing,
yeah,
brother?
Yeah, man. I couldn't help be the last guy talking about Bret Hart, man. So I had to call in. My two cents, man. You know, because Bret Hart is my favorite wrestler of all time. So any Bret Hart conversation, man, I got to put my opinion in there, man. And for me, my love for Bret Hart started with my older brothers. They watched it at the Hart Foundation because they're their favorite tag team. So I started following the Hart Foundation and when they had their match in with SummerSlam 90 with the Demolition, and they finally beat the Demolition for the tag team belts, even though it was kind of it was a shitty finish with the World Wars and all that. But that, you know, anything SummerSlam deal with Bret versus Owen in the steel cage in 94, SummerSlam 94. Yeah, that one, Bret versus Davey Boy, Bret versus Taker, you know, he basically, like SummerSlam was like his pay-per-view, you know, so I always ordered SummerSlam during the Bret Hart era when he was with the Fiend, so Bret Hart was like my favorite in WCW, I don't even know, man. He didn't really do anything in the summertime. I can't really remember anything then. But, yeah, but when it comes to Bret Hart and SummerSlam, I always remember his great matches he had then.
Yeah, absolutely, Ronnie. That's cool, man. They went hand-in-hand for a while there, Bret Hart and SummerSlam. He had great success in that pay-per-view. Even if he didn't come out on top in a winning way, his matches were always great, spot on. And I think it was really crucial during that time period when Bret got that initial singles push, where you had to kind of jump that gap from Hulk Hogan to Bret Hart. And it's like comparing apples to oranges, man. It's a completely different thing. And I don't know if you guys noticed, the last night Vince McMahon mentioned that Bret Hart brought legitimacy to the WWE that was not there before him. So I don't know if that was a kind of a little shot to Hogan in some way, shape, or form, but he really did. He brought, like, real wrestling matches to the main event. It wasn't just like Hogan sells for, you know, 20 minutes, then big boot leg drop and the match. You know, as much of a Hogan fan I am, that's just the way it was. Bret Hart actually could put on fantastic match after fantastic match. And I think that's what was really made him special to guys like us, Ron. It was just like he was the man. And in WCW, he did have some great matches. I know he had that awesome, fantastic match with Chris Benoit. He had one that I think is pretty rarely seen. Nobody ever sees it. But I think he had one with Malenko that was really good, that's kind of rare out there, if I'm not mistaken. His matches with Sting, with the big guys, with Flair, with Hogan, they were really underwhelming. But that's just because it was WCW and it was always on, like, Thunder or Nitro or some, like, B-level type pay-per-view that didn't really make a lot of sense. And they always seemed rushed. But, yeah, man, Bret Hart, just an amazing competitor. And how about you, JCD, man? What are some of your favorite matches, moments, or memories from Bret Hart?
Well, I'm glad that Ron mentioned SummerSlam 90 against Demolition, but if you want to go to his Hart Foundation stuff, take the match at SummerSlam 88 against Demolition. That was even better than the 90 match. The match in 89 against the Brainbusters was great. The first Hart Flair match where Hart beats him for the title. It's not out there that much because it was like a Coliseum Video exclusive. That is phenomenal. I was at the Garden for Austin Hart at Survivor Series, and that match completely, for what was more or less a lackluster show, that much saved that show and stole that show. WCW, if you look at his run kind of into the world title, heading into that tournament with the finals at Mayhem, a lot of his stuff was good. The tribute match with Benoit, the matches with Sting when Sting was a face again, the finals with Benoit, the first couple of title defenses were very good. You know, other than that, his WCW run completely flopped. And, you know, not just, you know, his, you know, yeah, and the match with Davey Boy at Wembley, you know, and, you know, was just great. And the Survivor Series 92 match against Michaels doesn't get as much love and you know, admiration as it really should, considering where those two guys were, and the fact that they were main eventing that pay-per-view said a lot, and they delivered.
Yeah, think where they were at a year before that. You know, if you look at WrestleMania in 1991, what were they doing? I think Bret Hart was in, like, a tag team match that lasted, like, with the Nasty Boys or something, Shawn Michaels.
Yep, they dropped to the Nasty Boys and the Rockers. I don't even know if the Rockers were on. Something like that.
So it's like if you look at that time span from where they were and where they got to when you're talking about a year and a half, it's pretty damn amazing. And that's just what WWE needed to do at that point in time. And it was smart. And it was really cool last night that Bret Hart was able to kind of mention Owen and give thanks to Owen and the crowd reacted big time to Owen. And let's hope that somehow, some way, Vince McMahon heard that and maybe he kind of, like, fights a little harder to get these Owen Hart clips out there and everything, because Owen was truly awesome as well. And I'll never forget.
Well, now the lawsuit settled, this shouldn't be an issue.
Yeah, but it's, it also, you know, Martha Hart still has that, that holds that, you know, grip on Owen Hart's intellectual
property.
No.
The lawsuit was settled. They, it is fair game now.
Yeah, but they can't put him in the Hall of Fame unless she says okay, unless she gives the okay to it.
They've got, they've settled everything with his image and likeness. He can go in this year.
When is the next time Minnie is going to Canada, or is there even a destination?
Were you in the court or something? Were you the judge or something?
This was done before either WrestleMania or Elimination Chamber. They settled, and it was everywhere that said that, you know, his likeness is fair game now. She's going to take a big, she's going to get paid nicely. It's not am I a judge or not. It's what was came out of the settlement between them. She's going to get paid ridiculously.
Everything on the internet's true.
So when's the next time Mania's in Canada, guys?
I don't think it'll ever be in Canada again.
Really?
I don't think so. I think the American stadiums now, since they're going to these gigantic football stadiums, I think there's just too big of a market here. I think it would go probably, I don't know. I don't think it'll leave America, man. I really don't. There's a possibility in the future. Maybe it will. Maybe they'll go back to Toronto or something along those lines. I don't know. Maybe,
yeah.
But if you're asking me personally, I don't think it will.
Well, that's unfortunate.
But yeah, it is. But speaking of that, Canada and stuff, so I promised you before the moment to talk about Christian, and we've got just a little over 3 minutes left in the show, so I'm going to give you, you know, the steering wheel right now and just let you say what you want to say about WWE bringing Christian back. Say whatever you want, man.
Well, from what I understand, Triple H doesn't want to bring back people for the sake of bringing back people. He only wants to bring them back or debut them if they have a solid program. So here's what I think they should do. Lately in Team Hell No, they've been playing this, Daniel Bryan thinks he's the weak link thing. And last night they have Bret Hart, you know, give him a little talk. And Bret Hart was telling him, you know, you're not the weak link. And Daniel Bryan asked Bret Hart, you know, were you the weak link in the tag team between you and Abel? So I think what they should do is, like, let's just say over the next course of a few months, every other week or each week, bring in some legend or some former tag team guy to give Daniel Bryan advice. Like this week it was Bret Hart. Next week let it be Ron Simmons and ask him, hey, were you the weak link of APA? The next week let it be Booker T and be like, hey, were you the weak link of Harlan Heat? You know, every single week just bring in some legend, you know, some old person from a tag team, you know, just a cameo, and then just a little segment of, you know, them giving advice to Daniel Bryan. Eventually this builds up to Daniel Bryan saying, well, the information they're giving me is useless because these guys are not on the current roster. And Daniel Bryan says, I need to get advice from a tag team guest specialist that's on the current roster. And then that's where Christian comes in. And so this leads to a peep show segment where Daniel Bryan asks Christian, were you the weak link of Edge and Christian? And then Christian takes offense to it, and then this leads to Christian and Daniel Bryan feuding. And there's your excuse to break up Team Hell No. And then you get a fresh mid-card feud between Christian and Daniel Bryan, two relatively over IWC favorites. You know, good match. There you go.
All right, makes sense, man. I like it. It's a good idea. And I was always a fan of Christian. I think they should bring him back in some way, shape, or form, even to help get over the new brigade, the new stars coming up from NXT. I think they can still use him to their advantage. But everybody, we've got just a little under 2 minutes left, and we've got a great show.
Can
tonight,
I take
great
8 seconds? Can I take 8 seconds of this 2 minutes left, and I'd like to address this to Will?
Yep.
This is from the Associated Press. This isn't even a wrestling news site. April 4, 2013, Martha Hart announced that she and the organization had reached an agreement over royalties and the use of Hart's name and likeness. So there you go.
Oh, there you go.
All right, there it is.
Yeah,
that's the official word.
Does that mean that they're allowed to use it or not?
Yes, obviously
yeah.
They came to an agreement over
game.
If they can.
Yeah, he's free game. Merchandise, video games, all that good stuff.
Well, I think
TLC
is a little more valuable.
Well, that remains to be seen. But everybody, this week is going to be a great week for PWP. Listen tomorrow night to You Didn't Know, JCD and Tope. Tope, you're going to be with JCD tomorrow night?
Yeah, I'll be there.
All right, great. You guys are going to go over some of the biggest wrestling news going on today and maybe talk a little bit Triple H career retrospective. You guys got a lot to
say
about
Triple H. Yeah, bring your shovel. Bring your shovels and sledgehammers. It's a Triple H career retrospective tomorrow night.
Oh, no.
I like the idea. I love it. So if you guys love to hate on Triple H, definitely listen in. Also, this coming Friday night, Pro Wrestling Obsession Live will be right here in the PWP Radio Network with Jesse Neal, former TNA star Jesse Neal will be on the show. So if you want to call in and talk to him, definitely get here Friday night, 9 p.m. Eastern Time, and Sunday night, Slammiversary post-game show right here on PWP Radio. Check us out on iTunes, Facebook, Twitter, MySpace, Google, wherever the hell you go. Check us out. This is Jersey Strong J for Will, Tope, and JCD signing off. Keep it real, everybody. Peace.